Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Trans World Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Well, that does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill. Starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother! Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8, is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
Our guest today on QSO is Joe Roth, WC4R. And Joe shares with us his battle with the Homeowners Association and his victory coming up on QSO. Our guest is Joe Roth, and Joe's call sign is WC4R. And hello, Joe. How are you today?
Very good, Ted. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I just got up. I was looking at looking at this Williamsburg weather
It's WilliamsburgWX.com site. And I was just impressed by the weather gauges. That's really cool. And I know that's not all we're going to talk about, but I looked at it, and if you're listening and you want to see something while you're listening to the radio, go up to Williamsburg, WilliamsburgWX.com, and you will see this this weather display. That's pretty slick. So how did you come about that? Let me ask that first.
Well, let's see. I started several years ago with a just a good deal I stumbled across at Radio Shack, you know, a home weather station, and I thought that was pretty neat. I was enjoyed the weather, been involved with Skywarn, oh, Lord, since the 70s, I guess, back in Pennsylvania. And so I thought, oh, this is pretty nice, and I just set it up, and I realized that you could get some software and record the conditions on your PC. And this is back in Windows 3.1 days. And from there, it just evolved. Of course, the internet came along, and better programs and software came along, and it just I just kept building out on it and updated a few years back with the Davis Instruments product, and went all out with that. And since it was accurate, I figured, well, let's do things right. And it's been on the internet live for a few years now with that new combination of instruments. And I use a program called Weather Display. I had another one prior to that, but I ended up with Weather Display because it gave me more flexibility. You have to be a little bit more techie to really uncover all of its capabilities. And added in a sister program that they support called Weather Display Live, and that's what is a flash program and gives you all those nice online, real-time type of instruments.
I was thinking this might be a good project for a bunch of amateur radio clubs across the country to
absolutely. You could tie it into repeaters. You know, a lot of repeaters interface with weather systems, and it does tie in with most of the weather services that that you know of, like Weather Underground and many others. Some TV stations tie in to use it. It uploads via APRS as well.
Really? That's a... I noticed three tabs on the bottom that I hadn't hit yet. One that says graph, records, and units. What's that all about?
Well, the graphing, if you click on that, it's going to show you different history of graphs. And then there you'll have a drop-down box of, you know, like a few hours of history to a week to a month. And the units you can change from metric to English. So you have some options there that you can change. It comes up with the defaults, but you can change it if you're looking, if you're from another country and you want to see more of the metric information. And you can save those changes on a cookie on your computer, so you don't have to keep changing each time you visit if you choose.
Okay, I see. This is wind speed. You got wind speed here. You have average and you have gusts. You know,
right?
And the gusts is a red line. Now that looks like the stock market. You know.
don't go there. It's too depressing.
So maybe the wind has settled down a little bit here. And then under records. Oh, yeah, this is really cool. This is cool. This would be a great project for a ham club to get there on their website, you know, where people could go up there and you can kind of
It certainly is.
See what
and Weather Underground does a great job. I know I have a link on that page to Weather Underground because they will give you the history of the station or any stations that tie into them, and you can go back for months and years and with information. That's... And of course, I do have a live webcam there too, as well, so you can look out my radio room window out the front window there and just take a peek at the sky and you know, see what it looks like there, for what it's worth.
Right at this point in time, the sun is shining, and I see a. It looks like, I can't tell for sure, it looks like a flag there.
Yeah, that's my flagpole out front there, so it gives you some indication of the wind.
Okay, now what's the resonant frequency of that flagpole?
It's resonating at 11 megahertz.
Right. I was just curious. Well, you know,
that's a Force 12 flagpole.
I was going to say, there's a lot of guys using flagpoles for antennas.
Oh, yeah, I had to use that in my HOA area, so that's another topic right there.
Well, yeah, you know, and we have, it was really marvelous. I ran across, you know, one of our sponsors is TW, or Trans World Antennas. And
yes.
The first time I saw one of those things, I didn't know what it was. I was at a ham fest. I walked right by it. And my son turned, he said, "What is that?" And I said, "I don't know. What is it?" And he, "I don't know. What is it?" You know, back and forth. And so we asked somebody. They said, "Well, it's an antenna." And I go, "Antenna? That doesn't look like an antenna. What kind of antenna is this?" You know, it looked like a high tech some kind of something, but I didn't know what. You know. And we got to talking.
Odd enough to get your attention.
Yeah. But it's really weird because we've put it places. And matter of fact, we've had some people that have sent us pictures of it in operation. And at first glance, you have to actually look for the antenna, you know, because it just kind of blends in with things. It's black. They, of course, is designed to be stealth, you know. So folks
right.
can put it on a balcony. They can put it places where they just can't. Cause now, some of these homeowners groups, or you know, where they're quite overbearing. I mean, it's to the point where they think anything that is an amateur radio antenna is just absolutely bone ugly. And
oh, I've been through that. Yeah.
I've taken
my homeowners that I used to live under here in Williamsburg to court. So.
Well,
I've been through it all.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, I'd like to think about this from a standpoint of. You know, for years and years, the local amateur radio guy in town was respected. They looked at him as if he were something special.
Right.
maybe a bit odd, but nevertheless, quite talented and special. And there was a great deal of respect for somebody that was in the hobby because you were part of kind of an elite group of people that had special skills, you know, and whatnot. And by that man's house usually stood a tower, not a huge tower, but one that went over the top of the roof of the house and up in the air, and usually there was a, you know, at least three or four elements of something up there, you know, which could be seen at a distance. And it in itself was a billboard for amateur radio. And then we went through the Citizens Band era, where guys were putting antennas up, you know, beams and whatnot, and tearing the daylights out of television sets. And
that added a lot of negative confusion to the hobby.
Yeah, and the DNA company out of Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, that used to build the Raider and the Maverick and the Phantom and all those nasty, nasty boxes that people put on the air. And, I mean, you might as well just, you know, drill a hole through your television tuner if you're going to watch Channel 2. It wasn't going to happen. But nonetheless, all that, we went through all that, and now we have a situation where, in most cases, if the people who ran these neighborhood associations had any idea what amateur radio was all about, or they had had some early on in their life, I guess I want to say, they've been exposed to it, they would have some respect for it. But some of the stuff I've seen, they show up, I mean, it's like not only is there a lack of respect, but there also seems to be like an aggression on their part.
And that's the element that I had to deal with too. You know, I started with, matter of fact, when we bought the home, we knew that there were in the CCNRs no antennas. But I knew, coming from the cable TV industry, that and working with developers, the developers put those in to pacify the cable TV company.
We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO. WC4R, right after this.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna.
Thank you.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions.
What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth. WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won.
The cable TV company wanted to ensure that if they're going to bury the cable and go through that expense of building their plant out, that they would get as many customers connected as possible. So the deal with the developers are, and I don't know if that's the case now. I've been out of the industry for some time. Put this in your covenants, and we'll be glad to invest in your development. Sounds fair enough from a business point of view. But unfortunately, when you write any kind of law, and that's what basically what a CCR is a local law, it gets to be too broad. And what that is, it's protecting, when they say no antennas, they're saying no antennas, so their homes passed is more attractive. For every mile that the cable passes, they want so many subscribers. No problem with that. But in the same time, when you say no antennas, they just meant TV antennas. They didn't intend ever to restrict CB, ham radio, or, even, maybe satellite dishes, but they lost that deal. So that's how it all started, and I think it just blew up and got ridiculous. Granted, some antenna configurations can be pretty ugly, but when we went in and bought the home, we initially went in, and I actually approached and personally visited the president of the Homeowners Association and said, we're looking at putting an offer on the home. Would you consider something? And they said, sure. He said, we will take a look at it. We'll work with you. Well, long story short, we bought the home. They never did want to work with me. And they shut it down from the very beginning. I put an antenna up. They never, I put proposals through. I told them what advantage there is having a ham radio station in the neighborhood. Gave them the videos. ARRL supported things. I was active in Skywarn and Racy's, Aries. Had a lot of support letters. Gave them all that information. Probably overloaded them with positive information of ham radio and my experiences. Put up a wire antenna, and it was a fairly wooded area. So, as you know, wire antennas can't be seen very well. And I put strung up between a couple of trees, got a neighbor's permission to use one of his trees. All of the neighbors around me supported me 100%. Not only the ones that are adjacent to my property, but also ones that could visually see my property. Nobody had a problem. But unfortunately, the president of the association was across the street from me, and he just watched it like a hawk. They tried taking photographs of my antenna, but the antenna never came through because you can't see it. But they knew it was there, and, one thing leads to another. So, of course, the antenna had to come down. And they even had, at one point, took down my antenna that was attached to the neighbor's tree, went on his property, removed my antenna, cut it down, cut the support line down. And at that point, of course, I had to call the county sheriff and show that there's a law that you can't interfere with the federally licensed station's operation, but of course I put it back up and they didn't touch it after that, but they, started the avenue of fines and nasty letters and suits and so forth, threatening that. Long story short, the antennas never went up. I did ultimately buy a Force 12 flagpole antenna, which I still use today at my new home. I have no restrictions here, thank goodness. They knew it could be used as an antenna, but I chose not to, just to prove a point. and told them that I sent them a letter with my attorney, who was also a ham operator, saying that there is a code in Virginia, and I have that on my website at wc4r.com. And that code shows that you can put a flagpole up, display the flag, and it specifically said that homeowners associations cannot impede that unless it's specifically mentioned in the CC&Rs, which it was not in our case. I sent the homeowner association a letter. It said, out of courtesy, I'm letting you know that I'm putting up this flagpole for a proper display of the U.S. flag. And here is a Virginia code that allows me to do that. And it was just a courtesy letter. They, in turn, said that they didn't recognize that for whatever reason. They played the card of, we've got deeper pockets than you do. And usually that's when homeowner associations win, because they do have deeper pockets. They have attorneys on retainers. You're paying their bill through your monthly donations. And I decided to fight them. And I sued them in the local court. It never ended up being heard because I embarrassed them too much through a letter-writing campaign in the local newspaper. Had tremendous public support from the VFW and a lot of personal letters, as well as two TV stations that aired it. And it was a great embarrassment to them. And they basically settled. Yeah, and the flagpole stayed up.
That is something that folks in different areas across the country need to consider, and that is, do not underestimate the power of your local television station or even radio stations in order to expose something like that. Because see, this is not because they're afraid of an eyesore. They're just wanting to fight.
You know? Right. And you know, I've called it many times, my $3,000 flagpole. It cost me $3,000 in fees, attorney's fees and court fees and so forth to fight this, that it was my right to begin with, knew it was my right under the Code of Virginia from the very beginning.
You know, I can't help but believe that if you were a homeowner, and let's say that you were not an amateur radio operator, you're just a homeowner. I mean, you've got, you know, and you choose that you do not want satellite, nor do you want cable television. Somehow, I can't help but believe that it's violating your constitutional rights and your rights to freedom of speech by prohibiting you to putting a television antenna, a standard TV antenna that you would buy at Radio Shack or Sears or, and I don't know what department stores, I guess Walmart probably sells television antennas. I mean, to prohibit you from putting that on your roof and attaching it to your television set, that has got to be a personal violation of some kind. In other words, because there may be people that don't want cable or satellite TV for whatever reason they have. I mean, it may not be a financial reason. I mean, they just may not want it.
And exactly.
I think you need to be able to make that choice. It is your property. And the other thing is that there needs to be some other definition or criteria as to what constitutes an ugly antenna, you know? Because I know I've seen ham antennas sitting beside houses, and maybe that's just because it's through the eyes of a ham. But you see a 60-foot tower in a backyard with a three-element beam on the top or a four-element single bander or something, and I don't know. I think they look cool. I mean, they just have kind of a stately appearance to them, you know?
Right. Well, I would hope, and I've always supported and pressed for PRB1, the FCC document PRB1, which is really a good launching pad and a boilerplate for a lot of the local ordinances to be formed around. And I know there's been laws in Congress that have yet to pass. They never seem to come out of committee where the local ordinances and the private ordinances, the CC&Rs, should really reflect reasonable accommodations, as PRB1 says, to ham radio antennas. And I think that's the bottom line. It's be reasonable. And there is always some sort of compromise that hams are willing to take, and they do constantly. Hams don't want to make their neighborhood or house ugly either, and they're very willing to work with the local ordinances and the homeowners associations, as I was. I went to great lengths, and I know there are many stories like mine where hams work with the homeowners associations, and most of the individuals fail against the homeowners because once it goes to court, they say, forget it. I'm not spending thousands of dollars.
Well, you know, and another thing, too, is most hams have to answer to the XYL.
That's true. That's exactly right.
And they're usually tougher than the homeowners organization.
That's right.
You're going to put that in the backyard?
You can hear it now. You're going to do what, honey?
Not on my house. You are not putting that on my house. You know, I guess we could get nasty. I mean, you could. You know, of course, it probably doesn't accomplish anything. But and it's unfortunate that you know some circumstance might arise. And you know what? It very well could in the future. The guy, that homeowners association president that lived across the street from you. You know, it could be that some point in time he'll have a son or a daughter in an area where something really bad happens and normal communications is down and he wants to know if they're okay. And, you know, and the only way to get through would be ham radio. And,
right.
You know, he might run into that in the future, and I bet you that attorney's head around a little bit.
Well, unfortunately, it sure didn't help me any when we had Isabel come through here a few years ago when I was at my other home, and we did lose, for a while, cell coverage. The towers were down, and the few that were up were overloaded. Communications couldn't get through that way. Of course, cable, telephones, and so forth, they were out for a period of time. Power was out for a long period of time, but being a good ham radio operator, I had a whole house generator, and I was ready, as I was always have been participating in field day to get myself in gear for those emergencies. And that's what we're here for. We practice every day at one level or another. And at certain times of year, we, practice a little bit harder and work a little harder at it and make sure that we're available when we're called out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been in situations where, and it doesn't take much. I mean, we had a bad snowstorm come through here, and it kind of fell rapidly. You know, one of those kind of storms that just kind of blows in, and a whole lot of snow comes down at once. In the middle of Tennessee, that's kind of uncommon where we live. But cell phones were useless. I mean, they became little paperweights, so you couldn't get a dial tone. You couldn't dial out. They wouldn't ring. The system was so overloaded with people calling relatives, and there was really no immediate danger. I mean, there was nothing. It was just snow, and yet the cell phones had, a sayonara cell phone. And, I guess when you see a situation like that, you begin to wonder. I'm going to stop just for a second so we can hear this clock in the background.
Okay.
What kind of clock is that?
A big grandfather clock.
Okay.
And a cuckoo clock on the side.
I was going to say, I thought I heard a cuckoo clock, but I wasn't sure. I thought, well, and I didn't know if, exactly. I was going to wait just a second and listen so we could hear it. I guess when I saw that, I thought, well, what if a dam broke somewhere?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, can you imagine?
The unexpected and the unknown and the unplanned happen, and that's when you're at your worst.
We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this.
If you already own a TW20 10 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only. Right now, only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide, and in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with the deluxe travel bag It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSL. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth. WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won.
I mean, anything that's anything, any kind of communications that's land-based at any point is subject to that.
And you see all the
And God help us with terrorists. What's going to happen next?
We are living in a situation, though, where we have a lot of high-tech technology that is dependent on any number of things. But the big problem is what are we going to do in a situation where we are dealing with the like a bad solar flare,
right?
and something we haven't seen necessarily in our generation since we've had satellites in the air and that sort of thing. And I don't think they're that unusual. I think these killer solar flares that take out every piece of communications equipment, they've been around for years. We just haven't seen any. You know,
right. I even went as far as being prepared there. I've restored an old Drake Sea Line because I wanted something without the chips and things that an EMF pulse could destroy or ruin in my gear. So of course, you know, I have that as a backup to a backup to a backup. And a lot of other hams are like that too. So, you know, we are quite capable. And you know, you have to look back at where some of this technology comes from. A lot of it comes from ham radio. I mean, in my high school days in the 70s, I was on 2-meter FM making phone calls via autopatch. And people were in awe that I could make such clear, easy, free telephone calls from the car or from the handheld radio in my front yard. And, of course, nowadays, that's nothing. But there was no such thing. There was not even a dream of cellular back then. And, of course, now we get into all the data communications, television communications via ham radio. A lot of these technologies, very high-end technologies, start with the experimenters in ham radio, develop, and move into the military and commercial markets. And that's what we are. We're experimenters. We're testers. And we're builders. And we try it out. We do a lot of the expensive R&D just for fun.
Well, you know, I guess the thing is that the emergency preparedness, like, for example, I've got a Drake TR-4C that I keep around here just for that reason only. And we have a generator here. The only thing is I don't have a DC power supply for the Drake, but I don't know how long it would run off of a bank of car batteries. I don't know how much life you could actually get out of that, because you'd have to have a way to recharge everything if you didn't have a generator. Of course, we've got a generator, but you could get on, you know, a Drake TR-4C puts out a pretty hefty amount of power because it's got three sweep tubes in the final.
Right.
You've got a C line, and I don't know, that those run a pair of sweep tubes, so they put out a fair amount of power too. So you're in a good situation should you have an EMP pulse. And I'll tell you, a lot of folks thought we were crazy
but we were not crazy. We were in we were running a radio station up in Hartsville, Tennessee. And the military was doing something. I don't know what they were doing. Later on, they made an announcement that they were doing something. But we experienced one of the strangest things on Earth. And it was what we finally determined was an EMP pulse that had gone wrong and during their testing. And it was, I think, aircraft out of Fort Campbell is where it was. And they were flying over this defunct nuclear power plant, I think. From what I was able to piece together in firing an EMP-type pulse weapon into the nuclear tower, you know, so they could, it was contained. Mm-hmm. And I think they were doing some sort of testing and who knows what, you know. And I've got no problem with the military testing. I think they need to test more, probably, you know.
True.
You know, but, you know, they need to have a little guy out in your front yard so when your power goes out and the ground on your telephone lines are severed and burnt in two, They need a little guy out in the line that says this is only a test, you know. But anyhow, we had all kinds of things wiped out there, and it turned out to be, from what I was able to understand, was an EMP test that had got misfired somehow, you know. But now it really gave me an education, because I know the phone company came out and they were going around to the businesses in the area, and the ground on the phone circuit going into the building, the earth ground going to the equipment, it had burnt right straight through that wire. It had created quite a difference of potential between the stuff in the building and the stuff outside. And
so much for your safe grounds that you rely on.
Yeah, and there was a lot. Well, yeah, because I don't know, I guess evidently whatever that is creates such a high EMF on the equipment itself inside the building that there's a, you know, I can't even imagine instantaneous current flow, you know, as to how much actually flows through there to burn through a ground wire. But it did. And there were people that saw flashes on the inside of the building where they were sitting, and all, we don't have no idea where those flashes were coming from, you know. But it was, that was something very, very unusual, very strange. Well, this is what's going to happen if, for example, we get hit with an EMP pulse from an atomic warhead or whatever. This is a whole different world. This is something we're not used to dealing with. And the fact that hams are prepared and you've got some old tube equipment, you can talk across the country. I don't think the rest of the country is going to have a clue. I mean, everything, we're totally dependent on satellites. We're totally dependent on microwave links and all these things that use chips and everything. The normal lines of communication are going to go down.
And I don't know if there's any very much regulation on any kind of EMP pulse type bombs, if you will, that I know have been experimented with. I don't know. Is that something some of the countries that we're worried about their nuclear capability, but what about EMP? That's a real threat. And it's going to be one of those silent things that you don't know what happened. And suddenly your radios, microwaves, TVs, just cell phones, they don't work, and you don't understand why. It just stops. It's nothing that you're going to be able to hear or see or feel. And, you know, that's a very real threat. And unfortunately, knowing the way things are, nothing will be done until it does happen, unfortunately.
Now, all these folks have gone out and bought these transistor hand crank radios, thinking that if the power goes off, they're going to be able to tune in the radio. If you get hit with an EMP pulse, that radio is going to be a paperweight. Whether it's on or off, it matters not, because it's going to take out the circuitry on the inside of the radio, and it's going to be useless. So, I mean, these are all things that need to be considered. And I think, you know, Joe Homeowner Association President, he needs to think about this a little bit. You know, this is something he needs to take into consideration. What's he going to do if he wakes up in the morning and nothing's working? Boy, he's going to really thank his stars that there's a ham operator living across the street from him that actually can communicate to the outside world and get word across country, across town, and otherwise. We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this. It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth.
7.0 to 7.3 megahertz without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. TransWorldAntennas.com. That's TransWorldAntennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth, WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won.
Just talk to any of these people that have been stricken by the fires, earthquakes, and so forth. My first experience in the 70s was the Nicaraguan earthquake, where I helped with communications to there. Tidal waves, tsunamis, you name it. These people will tell you horror stories and how grateful they are for amateur radio operators that come in from other countries to set up and help them, not just the local ones, but ham operators will travel and spend a lot of money through their volunteerism.
Well, something that's very interesting. I have gone to a doctor in Hartsville, Tennessee. I just happen to like this guy, and he's the old timey family doctor guy. That you can go to and. He doesn't pass it off. In other words, you walk in there and you say, well, gee, it hurts right here. Well, you're going to have to go to a hurts right here specialist. Let me make you an appointment. It's kind of like you wonder, why did I come here to start with? I mean, this guy's acting as an agent. So many physicians do that. But this guy, he's just a family doctor, and I've gone to him. And I walked into his office, and we got to talking, and he knows I'm into ham radio and also into shortwave. And we had a conversation, and... There was a bad tornado, went through Gallatin, and it went all the way up through Hartsville, which is a straight path almost, and took out all kinds of things. And he told me, he said, thank God we had a ham operator in town. I said, why is that? He said, we didn't have any communication. He said, we couldn't get to the outside world. And, of course, he had to communicate with other hospitals and other doctors and other things. That's part of what they do, And he couldn't get any communications going at all except this one lone ham operator. And when I was living in Hartsville, I had gone to one of our local ARRL guys, and I said, there's a group of us here that would like to put together an ARES group here in Trousdale County. And this guy at the time about took my head off, barked at me, and he said, we don't need that. That needs to be handled with the other county, blah, blah, blah. And he hangs up on me. And I was like, wow, what's that all about? So that the group was never formed. Well, after the tornado now, and that's just one man holding up progress, okay? That's what all that is. And that's what I'm going to get off on a tangent here, but I don't care. That's one of those situations where you cannot judge the ARRL by the actions of one person who is got up on the wrong side of the bed.
That's right.
You can't judge the league by that guy. He got up on the wrong side of the bed. He probably stepped on the cat's tail when he got up. And, maybe he's had a couple of weeks, a month, maybe a lifetime of it. I don't know. But those people, you just have to kind of overlook them and keep moving on, because the league is full of great people, and you just can't let one person sour your experience. But anyways, this went on to illustrate how this took seed. Because I had talked to the local hospital, and they were saying, yes, we really would like to have you set up a radio location here, and we'll provide you a space inside the building, and boy, this would be really cool. And when I went to this gentleman, he just shot it down like with a torpedo, you know. So we gave up on it and moved on. Well, then here it is, years later, this tornado goes through, and my doctor says, all the communication we had was just one ham operator, and thank God for him, or we'd have really been out of it. And of course, my mind raced back to the time when we were wanting to put, you know, equipment in that hospital. But thank heavens, when I went to leave, as I'm leaving town, I drive by the hospital, and I look, and I mean, on top of this hospital, and if anyone lives in Middle Tennessee, check out the Trousdale County Medical Center. It looks like an antenna farm. I mean, you can swear that it might be an FCC monitoring station or something. They got more antennas on top of that hospital than they've got air conditioning units and stuff. I mean, they're stretching every which way, you know. And I was glad to see that. I thought, now see, that's the way it ought to be. Here's an isolated hospital out in the middle of nowhere. Hartsville is isolated. It's a little town. And if anybody needs to be able to have something like that in a hospital, it's that community. And, you know, my doc just let it, I mean, he just went on and on. He couldn't say anything. All he could do was just praise ham radio, you know, because they saved him and a bunch of other people because they had to get communications out.
And right. And then, you know, there's a lot of good stories like that with the rural areas. When I moved here from Pennsylvania in 1999, I went through something somewhat similar, and we didn't have a ham radio club in Smithfield, Virginia, and of course through the through emergency communications and Skywarn, I decided with somebody else that let's start a ham radio club on Western Water Radio Association. They're called WT4RA, and from there, of course, we've grown and became a very strong club, which was founded all in that support of local communications. The county, luckily for me, the county supported us with open arms, allowed us to use their tower facility for our 2-meter repeater, and have been in great support. So we've been able to put equipment in all of the evacuation areas, the schools. We have antennas in the schools, radios ready for the schools. They've completely supported us. So, you know, the counties, if not initially, but usually eventually, they'll come around and they realize how important it is as part of their emergency plan.
I guess I find it so, this whole thing, so you prevailed in your situation. You won.
I was, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was fortunate. I'm not the norm in that case, unfortunately.
Well, I guess I was going to say, Your advice to amateur operators across the country, guys that live in these places, and unfortunately, what happens a lot of times, you've had your home for a while, and then they form the homeowners association, and they start trying to impose these rules.
It happens, yes.
My question is how do you what advice would you give to guys that are there that either want to put an antenna up or maybe have an existing structure? And now all of a sudden they're surrounded by a vigilante committee telling them they have to take this thing down. What's the best method of procession in this in order to keep the antenna up or to be able to get, you know, to put one up without having, I mean, the whole story of the wire antenna being out in the backyard where you can't even photograph it, and yet they're still, you know, they're still raising Cain about it, is a clear-cut case of overbearing, overzealous people that have absolutely they're not in touch with common sense. Unfortunately, we're faced with that kind of thing. But what's a good plan of action?
The only way that I could practically say how to diffuse that or to have some sort of success, and unfortunately, I should footnote here that you get some power-hungry people. You get the big fish in the small pond type of scenario, you're not going to win it. So be prepared for that. Be prepared for compromise. Make sure that you educate. And that's usually the core of the problem, is that people are simply ignorant. And you have to take a very common sense educational approach. You have to take the time to show them the positives. Show them how you can compromise if necessary. Make sure you have support of your neighbors. See if you can get a grandfather clause included. Something of that nature. But that's the angle that I would go with, and be armed with videos, letters, areas of support, articles of support, of course, photographs, samples. You know, there's a lot of verticals and wire antennas that work quite well. And if you have a tower up, I would definitely push for some sort of grandfather clause that would be reasonable. PRV1 is probably going to be your best friend, although it's not. It may not be the answer, but it's certainly going to show the federal positions and their intent when it comes to ham radio antennas and structures. Will that become influential down to the local homeowners association? Eventually, probably will, but it's going to take a long time.
We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this.
Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth. WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won. I guess, is it, do you think it feasible that you could rally support from neighbors that would make a difference? Or is that, in your case, it was you had the support of the neighbors. So, I mean,
right.
Why? I mean, I don't know. I guess my question is, and why would you, if you had the support of the neighbors, then how could the homeowners association president or whatever, how could he prevail against the majority?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, and sometimes you scratch your head and you ask that even after the decision was made, and the answer may be, well, it's a power struggle, is what it is. And when you're in a power struggle, who knows who's going to win? But you have to be prepared, and it may cost you a few thousand dollars. And if you're willing to fight for it, you know, you could prevail. But it's going to be a fight, and it's probably going to be it probably will get nasty at some point.
You know, it'd almost be worth for amateurs to pool together with the league and establish a fund. You know, almost like an insurance policy.
I agree. We have the Frequency Defense Fund, which is a great fund for the league, which I'm a life member of, and I support that, and something of that nature would be very wise, I think.
Because I think all you'd have to do would be to win a dozen of these cases, and once a precedent... Once that precedent is set, then the other ones, they're not going to be too anxious to tangle. especially they're not going to want to tangle with an organization. They may tangle with an individual, but they find out, wait a minute, there's a whole organization set aside to do this. They may be less anxious to deal with you, you know, or try to take you on. I think that would be a good idea, and I don't know what has to be done to do that. I mean, we'd make that suggestion to our league friends in Newington and say, what can we organize something like this? And of course, it would have to be looked at on a case by case basis, because there are some guys in our ranks that are going to want to put a 200-foot tower up in their neighborhood.
Right, you know? Right.
I mean, they're going to try it. You know, and they're going to, on top of that thing, they're going to have a bunch of Yaggies that looks like the original system that Bob Heil put up to do moon bounce. You know, I don't know if you ever saw that thing, but wow, what an array that was, you know. Can you imagine living next door to that? But for a guy that wants to put up wire antennas, and they may even wants to support or put up a small tower to support a good beam of some kind, where he can communicate on
just a proper structure for the antenna that you want to support safely. It doesn't have to be very tall.
It just seems unreasonable, but. If an organization were formed like that, that would be kind of good, because then you could say, well, you know, I'm represented by this organization. And then all of a sudden, when it comes to their attorney talking to our attorney, it's at a different level already. It starts at a different level.
That's right.
And that local attorney may give it second thought, may go back to the homeowners association and say, well, you better be prepared to fight, because these guys are... They've already won 10 cases like this, and they're willing to fight some more. I think it would be well worthwhile. Because, you know,
I would think there should be a lot of attorneys that are ham radio operators that are willing to work pro bono to some degree or some amount. Mine didn't, but, you know, there are a lot of those engineers and attorneys that are ham radio operators as well that could certainly assist in something like that.
I guess the other thing is that, you know, of course, most of America today, you know, we are, we've gotten into, it's all subdivision life. People have condos, people live in apartments. The home that has the large backyard where you could actually put up an antenna for 75 meters, it's becoming extinct. In other words, it's no longer the majority. So this is becoming this can affect, and what I'm thinking, this affects the growth of amateur radio. This affects the growth of communications on, especially, and it affects the league. It affects league membership, because the fewer hams, you know, I had people, since we've been dealing with the Trans World Antenna Company, I've talked to a lot of people that said, well, I've got a technician, but you know, I was thinking about getting the general, but you know what? There's nowhere for me to put an antenna. You know,
sure. And you know, you mentioned it affects those areas, but I think more importantly than anything, it affects our national security.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think ham radio operators are probably one of the least recognized. I know we get some recognition, but people don't really realize what we can do until something goes just dreadfully wrong. You know, I mean, it's got to go, something goes just really sour, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, there's these guys that can set up and they can talk all over the place. They can communicate. And boy, this antenna restriction stuff is really, you know, it really puts the brakes on it and holds it back.
But, right, and we shouldn't all just focus on homeowners associations or the land ordinances and so forth, land restrictions, but it even comes into some of the local or city and county restrictions have to be addressed as well. Some, I've never experienced it, but knowing from other ham radio operators, there are plenty of ridiculous restrictions and placed on them at that level as well. So those have to be addressed. It's usually not as severe, but they are highly restrictive in some cases, and those need to be, you know, some attention needs to be raised in that. Some hams, including myself, feel that the restrictions that can be put on ham radio operators in some environments, is almost an electronic parallel to negating my rights under the First and Second Amendment of the Constitution and free speech. From a day-to-day operation point of view, when you don't have the emergencies. But we'd like to discuss other things. We'd like to discuss politics and other areas of interest. And isn't that my right to free speech? And now you're taking that effectively away from me.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how many countries allow that? A lot of countries don't allow ham radio to begin with because all media is government controlled. In Jordan, I was the country of Jordan. I was many years ago honored to make contact with King Hussein, JY1. He's the only ham radio operator in that country. Ham radio is illegal, except for him. He's passed on, but that's just one of those examples. Can you imagine ham radio and free speech in some of the other Middle East countries or other countries all over the world? We're so fortunate here, incredibly fortunate, and yet it's in our Constitution to have free speech, and somebody wants to come in through the back door in a very covert way and impede that.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, I mean, you don't realize that there's another thing here, too, that you have to kind of bring into focus, and that is there's a number of shortwave listeners that listen in on ham conversations constantly.
Absolutely.
And I got in contact with a company in Beijing, China, by the name of TechSun, TECSUN. If you want to see something interesting, go to Google and put in TechSun Radio Company. And what you'll have to do, unless you know Chinese, you'll have to hit the translate button. What a beautiful thing about Google. They can take that entire website from the TechSun Radio Company and translate that into English, and you can read it, and it's really, really fascinating. They produce, I think, all of the Grundigs and the Etons, and I mean, they produce, well, they make 30,000 multiband radios per day. Per day. And I know that's an astounding fact. I first heard that, I thought that can't be, but that's what it is. I think they put out about 7 to 8 million multiband radios, I think, per year, I think it is. I don't know. It all boils down to about 30,000 a day. And a lot of those radios have beat frequency oscillators on them. They're set up for sideband. Not all of them. Most of them are set up for all of them are set up for receiving shortwave broadcast. But a lot of them have the beat frequency oscillator on them, or as they would say today, the sideband button, you know,
right?
And people can listen into hams. Well, consequently, with all those kind of radios flooding the market, this Liberty Net that meets on, I think they're on 3877. I'm not sure. They may have more frequencies, but I know. And they get in there, and I mean, they talk politics, and they talk about everything they believe and what they stand for and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of people that tune those guys in to hear them every night. You know, those shortwave listeners are tuning.
Absolutely. We have a local group here on the East Coast on 75 meters, 3938. And we openly talk about politics and run a net every night. They call themselves the North Carolina Single Sideband Net, but it's just a group of guys from Maine to Florida to the Midwest. And the core of the group is probably about a dozen guys. But when we all get emails and cards, QSL cards from SWLs and listeners, and there are hundreds, literally hundreds of people that are listening to about a dozen active hams. And of course, during the net, some of them come out. It's not unusual to have 40, 50, or 60 people checking in into the net in the evenings just to say, hey, we're listening. And it's no surprise. When you transmit, you can bet there's about 100 people listening to you.
And I don't know, I've been on late at night talking to a bunch of guys, and the conversation would switch over to old-time broadcast radio, and we'd be talking about WABC, and we'd talk about KHJ Los Angeles, and CKLW in Detroit, and all these radio stations, and we'd get ready to sign out, And all of a sudden, there's two or three dozen guys that's all gathered around listening, and they all check out at the same time saying, boy, we really enjoyed listening to this. They never said a word through the entire QSO, but when we went to sign out, it was like, you know, there was a whole crowd of people there. And no telling how many shortwave listeners, you know, and there's a lot.
That's right.
What a lot of hams don't understand, you know, and that is there's a big, huge shortwave listening crowd that by nature of their personalities, those individuals do not want to get a ham license. They may picture themselves as not being technically savvy enough. But some of them are just introverts, and they don't really want to talk. They just want to listen.
And that goes for a lot of hams, too. I'll use myself as an example. 95% of my operation is listening. I will have the radio on for hours and sometimes days and never transmit. Watch out when I do. But I think that's very common with a lot of ham operators. I mean, I have one in my car, and I rarely transmit with it, but I listen constantly. And now ham radio operators operate remote from their offices because of the internet and technology. You can remote control your radio from anywhere in the world, your radio back home. So it's very common for hams to be listening a lot more than they used to be.
Well, yeah, and I guess the thing of it is, though, on the shortwave side, when you combine the amateurs that are listening, the guys that, you know, and I know I've met a lot of guys, a lot of fellas that have shirts decked out that very seldom transmit. They just don't ever beats all I've ever seen. I guess that's just because I've got a big mouth. What do you think? You know, is that what it is? You know, but I mean, you go in these people, they're like little mice. In other words, they just don't talk, but they listen, you know, and they can tell you vast amounts of information about things they've heard. And of course, now, I don't know, are you familiar with Glenn Hauser and World of Radio?
Yes, a little bit, yes.
Okay, every week, and you need to go, folks that are listening, you need to go to World of Radio and worldofradio.com. And check out his website and listen to his reports. But, I mean, there are shortwave listeners all over the world that report in how he gets all this data together and puts this weekly report and weekly show together. I have no idea, because as you begin to listen to it, you almost have to record the thing, and you almost have to stop it, you know, periodically and write down some notes, because he's just so packed with information. But there's a whole lot more folks that listen to shortwave than what most amateurs even begin to fathom or realize. I mean, they are out there.
Well, if TechSun and others are out there producing so many radios, they're going into somebody's hands somewhere in the world, and they're being used.
Well,
there are an awful lot more listeners than anybody is probably projecting.
Well, in China, and it's a little different than here in the States. In other words, in the States, There's guys listening on ham rigs. I mean, there are people buying, I guess I want to say amateur radio equipment, or they're buying receivers from Kenwood and Yaesu and ICOM and all these companies, Tantech, and they listen. You know, all they do is listen with these things. And most all those companies put out, a real pro-grade type shortwave receiver. That's equivalent to the receive end of a really good ham rig. So though there's that variety in the United States. In China, in speaking with one of the fellows over there at the TechSun company, I was asking him. I said, well, you know, shouldn't shortwave stations that are broadcasting internationally translate into Mandarin and other dialects of Chinese? And he said, no. He says, second language here is English. He said, everybody wants to learn English because they get better jobs, and it opens up a lot of doors to them. But then he startled me. He said there are more people in China listening to shortwave radio than there are people living in the United States of America. And I was like, okay. And, of course, right now, the amateur radio in China has taken off like a bullet. I mean, these guys are really into it. So I think we're going to be seeing a whole lot more of our Chinese counterparts. And boy, what a good way to spread international goodwill. And that is for U.S. amateurs and Chinese amateurs to interface.
Yeah. That's what I've learned back in high school when I got started in 1973 was how small the world is. It shrunk the world 10 times. And, you know, and China, Australia, Europe, Africa, they weren't countries that were halfway across the world anymore. They were just a push of a button away. And especially, and that was a tremendous impact back in the 70s when we didn't have the technology of today and there was no internet. But that shrunk the world, but it also created friendships. And I think that's probably what a lot of the ham radio operators that work the shortwave bands will say over and over again, is that you forge some incredible friendships. And if you are fortunate enough to be able to travel personally or on business, those ham radio operators are extremely willing, as we are here in the States, if foreigners come to the States, to look us up. Let's show you around a little bit, you know, spend an evening together. And if we had a lot more of that in the States as well as other countries, a lot of our difficulties would seem a lot less troublesome.
And all the more reason why we need to convince these folks that are wanting to impose regulations in counties and in cities, you know, against putting up amateur radio antennas. Now, the other thing too, I mean, the new cell phone laws that are out, they're wanting to ban cell phones. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I can't argue much. It bothers me when I see somebody driving erratically, and once you catch up with them, there's the cell phone, and they're punching in a text message. You know,
sure, we all see that over and over again. You're right.
So, yeah, I think something needs to be done about that. But, boy, there needs to be something that separates the fact that, you know, we have amateur radio equipment in the car and we have a hand mic that we pick up, and you can use a hand mic without ever having to deal with, doing the things that you have to do to operate a tiny cell phone in your hand, you know.
Well, that's no difference than the police officer that picks up the microphone for his radio. And the ham radio operators, again, most of our time is going to be listening. Just because we have the radio there and the microphone there doesn't mean we're even picking it up. But thank goodness when we see that accident and we call it in, that we are there. And we all run across that lots of times, or cars that are in the ditch because of snow and ice or other situations like that. We can get the word through. And in an emergency, when the EOCs are activated, we get the word through a lot faster than any cell phone can.
Well, and that's exactly what my point was, that people will say, well, I don't see why ham radio is all that important. I can call the police on my cell phone. And the thing is, no, you can't under certain conditions. It's just like here, when I watched the snowstorm take out every cell phone. I mean, no one could call anywhere. And
how many times are you on a handheld phone, which operates at a fraction of a watt in power, and you're not on the interstate or a main road, and the coverage is only on the metropolitan areas or the main roads, and you're just a little bit off the beaten path? How many times have you picked up your phone, your cell phone, and said, oh, I have no coverage? There are a lot of situations like that, and that's not going to happen with ham radio.
And that's the truth. But what I'm saying, even in the big cities where the repeaters are there available to you, and Simplex is available to you, and you have either a snowstorm or any condition, and there's a number of things that can happen in a community that can take out, you know, cell phones by means of just overload. Too many people.
Not only overload, but the emergency responders have priorities in their cell phones, and they being in the cell phone industry myself, too, in the past, they are programmed to have priorities on the channels. They can seize the channels and hold those channels open for emergency communications first, which is the right thing to do. But that leaves the public out with without a cell tower or a channel to connect to.
Now, I don't know. That's just another one of these facets that you could get into and talk to for hours. I don't know what progress has been made in that area. And I guess we really ought to check that out and talk to somebody that really knows what they're talking about rather than all the conjecture, but to find out where do we stand on this cell phone issue, and how is that eventually going to affect all of us in ham radio. You know, we'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? And what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth, WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won. Let me ask you this question now. Let's digress a little bit here. When did you get started in amateur radio? Tell me a little bit about the first time you ever saw anything that even resembled an amateur radio rig, and what the path was that led you to pursue it and get licensed.
Well, that we always talk in ham radio about an Elmer. And an Elmer is really just a person that leads you and takes you down the road to get you, started on the right foot, if you will. I've been an Elmer for many people, and that's what happened to me when I was in high school. And back in 1968 was the first time I got the radio bug. Well, back then, I've heard of ham radio, but I really didn't know what the devil that was. And I went to put on my Christmas list one year a CB radio that I saw for $100 at Lafayette Radio Electronics. Now, Lafayette's long gone, but I got a radio as a Christmas gift, and that CB radio, matter of fact, I just found another one on eBay, and I have it on my shelf for nostalgic reasons, and it works. But that's what got the bug in me, and right away, I being technically oriented, it just connected with me. It really clicked. Enjoyed it tremendously for a couple of years. My father knew somebody through his through the business that he owned, a customer of his. His name was Ned, and it was I think it was W3NED in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he heard that I had a CB radio, and he thought, oh, well, I've got to improve on this, as a good ham would be, and convert him from the dark side to the ham radio side. Well, back then, CB radio was fine. Everyone used their real names. They used license numbers issued by the FCC, and everything was very cordial, completely unlike it was when in the 70s. So I got out of it in the right time. Was moved into the ham radio ranks thanks to Ned. Of course, Ned was an elderly gentleman at the time, and he's long passed, but he got me started. I then got my novice license in front of an extra class ham who was my principal at my elementary school at Perrysville Elementary. And Milt was his name, Milt Moratis. And two of us, a good friend of mine, and myself, we both took our novice test in front of him and passed, and there just took off. That was September of 73, and moved up from novice to general and later on my extra class. And that's how I got started in it.
I guess the thing is that everybody follows a different path, you know, getting into amateur radio. We do run into one common denominator, and that is the Elmer, you know, and we have a local VEC team, the Nashville Volunteer Examiners here in town, and they've got a website up, and just recently attended one of their sessions, and my goodness, they had all kinds of people coming in to take the test, and there was a real good showing of local amateurs there, but Elmering is something that's so important, because without that, of course, there's a lot of folks who would never get into the hobby. But now, what caught your eye? What was it that you saw in amateur radio that made it irresistible to you?
Well, you know, I think it was in my blood, and I say that with tongue-in-cheek because I remember an old story that my mother told me. Apparently, when I was a grade school-aged child, somewhere in there, I took a key, car key, stuck it in the electrical socket in our dining room, and got zapped pretty good. So I guess that's what charged me up, if you will, to get started in all this. And I remember to the day that my mother passed away and sold the house, that little stump of the melted key was still in the outlet. It's hard to say. I guess it was just the fascination of the ability to communicate wirelessly, and talking to people that you don't know and that you'll probably never meet, that could be down the street or across town or in ham radio, you know, on the other side of the world. And it's amazing how many friends you can make. And when you have that common denominator, an interest with people on the radio, right away you know that you will click at some level or another, or at some amount. And I think that it's the friendship and that communications. It might be the fascination of the technology at first, and in ham radio there's so many avenues of technology that may spur things on and motivate you and keep you going as you grow and educate yourself through this through the life of ham radio. But the friendships are certainly what holds you in there and really cement the hobby.
We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL ted.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSL. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth, WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won. You know, I guess, and I can think back to the time when you were talking about Citizens Band in the 60s. When I got exposed to it was, it was in the 60s, late 60s. Maybe it had to do with different areas of the country. But where I grew up, in the Motor City, everybody used handles. I mean, no one used a call sign. I mean, there was a few people on there. I remember listening, and somebody would say, "Break for illegal."
And a guy would say... The old handles, code names, whatever, they started to come into existence probably in the late 60s and really were prevalent through the 70s. But, I guess Pittsburgh might have been just a little bit behind the curve by a year or two, maybe, fortunately. But there's a lot of... when we talk about mentoring, and sure, I'm a VEC as well, VE as well, and help with not only the studying, and matter of fact, my wife and my daughter got the bug, and my daughter at, let's see, I'm trying to think back, I think she was the age of about 14, she got her tech license. My wife, her first year that we were together, she got her technician license as well. Maybe my other two children will too, but they're still in grade school, so I'll give them a little bit more time, maybe another year or two. My daughter Kirsten and my wife Shannon both got their ham radio license. They're holding their tech license now. Matter of fact, my daughter is studying for her general now. My daughter, who's now 17, just loves the aspect of ham radio. She loves working with the youth, and that's where we need to grow. I think most hams recognize that that's where we need to grow the hobby in the youth area, and I'm real sensitive to that. My wife has her license, a technician license, mainly just for convenience and that sense of security and safety. She got it because of my involvement with emergency communications. And, well, it's one way to get in touch with me, too. keep tabs on me. No harm in that. And the licensing is so easy now with no Morse code required, although a lot of us, myself included, feel that it should have been kept at least for the extra class, but it is what it is now. But the licensing is easy to do. There are plenty of great books, classes, clubs, online sources. It's phenomenal how easy it is and how much information is out there at little or no cost at all. So my daughter is working on her general. She'll probably have it here in a few months. She doesn't use the radio very much. She only has a handheld radio, but she enjoys going to the Dayton Hamvention, Hamfest like in Frostfest in Richmond, Virginia. She looks forward to those things. Matter of fact, yesterday she bugged me. She goes, "Oh, there's a ham radio cruise out of Virginia Beach. Do you want to go on that?" I said, "Yeah, someday, dream." But there you go. A lot of, not only the young people, but a lot of the, we were talking about the CB radio people, and CB radio is does have a bad connotation, but there are a lot of good operators in the mix. And the hams sometimes forget that is a extremely good resource of ham radio operators. I don't know what percentage of hams really came from the CB ranks originally, but I would say the majority did, and probably an extremely high percentage.
Well,
a lot of hams don't want to admit it, though.
I think of the current generation of hams, I should say, that's true. I think the previous generation, it was not true. The previous generation got into ham radio through ham radio. The second bunch that came along got in through Citizens Band. And here is something that's a hot...
Yeah, a lot of them came in, the very old came in through the military.
A hot button with me at this point. So let's share hot buttons here. The youth, younger people, in many cases, in a lot of cities, a lot of towns, on two-meter repeaters, as well as on HF, and HF especially when they first get those generals, we've got some rude guys on the air that just don't welcome these folks into the hobby.
Absolutely. As soon as they use some inkling of CB jargon, I hear it all the time, too. They just, some hams will get in there. It only takes one ham, and they just let them have it, and call them a CB-er and run them off the frequency. And that's appalling to me. You've got to, hey, grit your teeth if you have to. You know, as I say, you know, bite your lip until you draw blood. But, you know, help the guy. Put your Elmer hat on just for a minute. And that guy will be so, that new ham will be so appreciative. And you'll have a best buddy in no time. You know, we all had Elmers, and we all needed help with that at one level or another. So, you know, if they've got a bad habit, work on it. Let's break those bad habits. I try my best in, there's a CB forum called the Quack Shack. And, you know, like any forums, there's a lot of junk. But amazingly, this was a CB forum that now has grown. Well, a lot of CBers just call themselves radio hobbyists because they don't like the name of CB anymore. And they truly are radio hobbyists. They're technicians, radio technicians in a sense, but they're just stuck on that CB frequency. And when they're introduced to ham radio, you know, it's a whole new world for them, and they can't believe what they've been missing all this time. And I did a quick survey on that forum, and it was amazing. Most of the operators that are CB operators are also ham radio licensed, which amazed me. I thought maybe 20%. It turned out to be well over 60%. And with that, we started, you know, a ham radio section on the board, and it's grown very well. And there are several of the experienced ham radio operators that get on, and we mentor, coach, Elmer, these operators, and they're getting their ham radio license, and they're upgrading. They're not just sticking with the technician. They're moving right up into the extra ranks, and, you know, and that's just one of those outlets.
Well, you know, I guess one of the things that I thought would be a good idea, this is just conjecture on my part, but you can, you know, these guys, you can go out and pick up a CB radio for $10. I mean, you go to a ham fest, you'll find dozens of them for $10.
Or go on eBay and get one.
But the thing of it is I wish they authorized us amateurs to be able to use our call signs on 11 meters and to be able to talk to CBers.
You could use your call sign on 11 meters. They wouldn't understand what was going on. But you'd have to use an FCC-type-accepted radio, which ham radio is not.
But anyways, to make a long story short, in order to identify, you know, who a ham is and what a ham is, and to be able to kind of be an ambassador in that arena, and one of the things that I noticed when I was very young, and I had I think my first Citizens Band radio was an old tube-type Knight 2590 with a 23-channel variable receive and rock-bound transmitter. And I had, as a kid, boy, I'll tell you, that was really something. I mean, that was just an amazing thing, all these voices coming in. And once again, I was an only child, so I was up all hours of the night, and there was always somebody to talk to. Now, they were pleasant people, and there were some crazy people, you know, but it was like anywhere else you go, you know. I mean,
just like in your workplace, there's pleasant people and crazy people.
Right. Well, you join a church, and you've got nice, wonderful folks, and you've got crazy folks. I mean, so anyways, but what I found was very tragic was at that time, the majority of the ham community looked down on Citizens Band people, and you were considered you were in the slums.
That's right.
You know, and they looked down their noses at you, and they did not want to mentor a young person who had a CB radio. Oh, you're into Citizens Band, up on that chicken band thing, huh? Is that's what you're doing, huh?
Yeah, you know, and that was Children's Band.
Yeah, that was the attitude, and I guess they kind of forget everybody has to start somewhere, you know. And at that time, I wondered, why is it that hams don't do well? Why wouldn't they form little code practice groups on Citizens Band? At the time, it would have went over very well, but there was too much prejudice and too much malice in the hearts of many for something like that to get started. And it, just the peer pressure alone to think that a ham would stoop to operating on a Citizens Band radio, you know. I guess that kind of bothered me. Now, I don't know what the lay of the land is here now. I don't know. I know Channel 19 and the truckers, that's a big thing. I hear folks say, well, boy, there's a lot of foul language on Channel 19 and on the Citizens Band, and that very well may be because I don't listen to it. And not because I avoid it. It's just it's one of those things I don't have time to do.
But, well, you can always turn the knob and avoid that channel altogether.
But as you travel across the country, the truth of the matter is, I've had a CB radio in the car. I don't have one now, but I've had one in. And I've been passing through big cities and throw my call sign out on not one soul answer. So, I switch to another repeater. And, I've actually had guys come back to me and say, well, you know, we reserve our repeater for emergency communications, 73 there, guy. You know, and in other words, you threw your call sign out. Please don't talk on our repeater. Best wishes. See you later. You know,
and, which is absurd, because when you go to use the repeater and it's not working, you wonder why it doesn't work as well as it should, because it's never been worked on and tested and maintained.
You know, one of the most marvelous things, I think, one of the most intriguing things is Echolink. And the other system they use, what is it, IRLP, I think?
Right, IRLP, huh?
Being I'm dyslexic, I usually reverse letters in acronyms, you know. So anyways... But anyhow, I think that is so fascinating. But yet, I've fired up the computer. I've got Echolink on my notebooks and whatnot. Now they've got the little proxy thing that they have in there now, so you aren't bothered by all the restrictive firewalls and stuff. But I mean, you can take your notebook, open it up somewhere, and log into a repeater. But what I'm finding is most of the repeaters are unoccupied. You know, you can get in there and throw your call sign out. It's the same thing. You're talking to yourself. You know. So I go to the Echolink test page and I give my call sign out and I listen to myself come back and I think, okay, this is but I don't know how many times I have logged into a repeater somewhere and nobody's home. So with that in mind and with the beginnings, a lot of the old beginnings in Citizens Band, now we have that same sort of almost, and this is not in. Probably the majority of circles. It's probably in just areas, you know, some areas on 75 meters where the groups tend to be a little cliquish. But we really do have to take a hard-nosed look at accepting young people and welcoming new young folks on board. You know, we really have to do. Now, something happened. Did you hear the interview I did with Chris Matthew, the young fellow that has started 73's .org. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yes, I heard that show.
And I one of the things I thought was very interesting was all the banter on EHAM, the debate on whether or not it should be 73 or 73s. And I thought, boy, what a way to split hairs. Now, ever since I can remember, I have always used the term, and I've always said when I went to sign out with someone, I've always said 73s. And, of course, Chris has got a QSL card from Hiram Percy Maxim that is signed 73s, okay? So, I asked him, I believe it was Wayne Green, and I thought, well, this guy, he's qualified. If anyone can tell me what the proper term of 73s is or 73. And
Wayne Green will tell you.
Yes, he will. But it was like, okay, well, 73 is best wishes and 73s is many best wishes. And so a lot of hams wanted to go beyond saying 73, so they would make it plural, 73s, many best wishes to you, you know? And I thought to myself, well, that makes perfect sense, but why the hair splitting? I mean, don't we have something else to do other than argue over something like that? And I think that's a real prime example, although Chris said that the discussion on EHAM actually gained him about 200 new members because it became a controversy, a subject of controversy. But now there, a Facebook for amateur radio. What a wonderful idea. Everybody ought to applaud him and say, hey, you know, good going, guy. And we all ought to go to 73s.org and sign up, you know, and be part of it, and at least have our presence there, you know, because then when the rest of the world happens to click on that site, my goodness, look at how many hams are participating in this. We'll be right back with our guest Joe Roth on QSO WC4R right after this. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Joe Roth, WC4R, a ham that took on a homeowners association and won. Then I'm hearing about guys that are on Twitter. A D-Expedition was just was on Twitter, and I can't remember which one it was. And I, when they first came to me and they said, we're talking about Twitter, I thought, what in the world is that? You know, and it's another mysterious, one of these mysterious online terms that you don't know. But that turns out to be quite a thing and a lot of hams participating in it. So I hate to see us look at the new online portion of amateur radio where the computer is married to the radio and look at that like CBers were looked at back in the 60s and 70s. You know, if we do that, I think we're making a tragic mistake and we're going to turn a lot of people away. Yeah.
I have to agree with you there. And you know, some of that, there's not to go off 2 minutes of a tangent, but, you know, I think that marriage of radio and computers is not only inevitable, but very practical and sensible right now. I'm one of my, I have, like I said, several radios, and I love a radio that's a box with knobs and buttons and so forth. But that's kind of the old school, and I'm comfortable with it. I'm looking right now in purchasing a. I have a Tentec Orion, which I purchased a few years ago because I liked it because you can upgrade it and computer control it, of course. But I'm looking at the new Flex Radio 5000, and not only is it, you know, very state-of-the-art and great transmitter and receiver and so forth, and it, on the air it sounds like a wonderful piece, but that is all computer-driven, what they call software-defined radio. And that is definitely, without a doubt, the way it's going. The military uses that, software-defined radios. It's just a box, no buttons or knobs on it at all. Everything's on your computer screen. It takes some getting used to. There's no doubt about it. But certainly, it's proven itself. It's proven itself very well and has great support. And the younger kids are extremely comfortable with that. And I think that's going to be a very comfortable direction to bring the younger ham radio operators in is through a software defined radio and the development of that. It's proven to be the new avenue and certainly the way to go.
Well, you know, I can recall not too long ago, my son was traveling down the road professionally. They were going somewhere in Florida as part of some, what was that they were doing? An outreach of some kind of a ministry outreach they were involved in. Anyways, he's driving down the road in this van with a bunch of guys he works with, and he fires up his notebook, and through his cell phone, the notebook was coupled into the cell phone to give him broadband access, and he logged into Echolink and was talking to some guy in Germany via Echolink, going down the road, talking on his notebook. And the fellas in the van were just like, whoa, This is really cool, you know? So you can't say, you cannot say, there is no legitimate, this is not legitimate to say, well, computers have got the interest of the young people, they're just not interested in ham radio anymore. Because when you marry the two together, especially to a younger crowd, it becomes irresistible. You know?
Right. Well, you mentioned the Echo Link, but you know the manufacturers are coming around recognizing that. Look at I mentioned Flex, but look at the new Tentec Omni 7 model, which has an Internet Ether port built in, stock from the factory. Plug it into the Internet, and you can operate your beautiful high end amateur radio from anywhere on the Internet. You can directly connect to your personal radio through that laptop in the van or office computer or whatever you're allowed to use from anywhere in the world. And you're talking on your very own radio at your very own station in full control of everything. Talk about a marriage of computers and radios and via the Internet and repeaters. It's phenomenal.
Well, I think that all of this, of course, is what is really going to breathe the life into radio, and especially now, I want to go back to this. When we're running into situations where folks are living in congested areas, you have subdivisions, you have apartment complexes, you have even in the subdivisions. Look at how many guys that are into amateur radio now that are retirement age. They're going to have to sell the house that they're living in. They don't necessarily have to, but they usually make the choice to do it because it's just too big a house anymore.
And you can't maintain it. You can't keep up with it. Exactly.
So they want to get into a condo or an apartment or someplace. And a lot of these places, which my mom lived in a high-rise community, and this was not like a convalescent home. These are people who are, you know, they've got cars, they run, some of them have part-time jobs and whatnot, but they live in the high-rise community. And you get fellas moving into that, and are they really wanting to give up their hobby? You know, that's the whole thing. So these kind of radios have possibilities because they can be located at remote locations. And then
think of the clubs. That would probably be one of the smartest investments a club could ever do if they have a club station or even a radio at the EOC and have it available for hams to connect to remotely.
But when you get into this thing, you're running into and once again I get back to my my friends over to the Trans World Antenna Company here's a product that's built by handicapped folks. And it's a beautiful little antenna. But for folks that can't do that even, you know, to get the restrictions in their neighborhoods to be able to participate in ham radio by putting up that dipole antenna or being able to put up a small tower, what you've done was a milestone, you know. And I applaud you because when you spent your $3,000 in legal fees, you were spending it for all of us. You know, it's what you were doing because you were actually setting a precedent there.
Exactly.
And I think there needs to be a lot more of that.
And you know, it's funny that it wasn't even the money I spent was not for an antenna. It was for to display the American flag. That was the whole point of it. It could be used as an antenna. I chose not to because I wanted to win the suit and keep it clear. I was keeping everybody focused. After that, could I use it for an antenna? I probably would, but you know what I did? I put a for sale sign up in front of my house after that.
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you heard from, has this created a situation where you've heard from amateurs from different parts of the country who have been faced with the same problems?
Yes, I have heard from a number of hams in Northern Virginia and other areas as discussions come up on things like eHam and QRZ. And on their forums, and I will chime in to try to assist them.
I was going to say because that really ought to be that. I'm sure that's a hot button. You know, it's got to have impacted so many people. And I think I wonder how many are just passive and say, "Well, there's nothing I can do," and that's just the way it is. And they just give up because they don't think that there's first off they don't have the funds to fight it. Or maybe they can't find A lot of it, too, is finding an attorney that understands it, you know, that they actually understands this thing.
I was fortunate. My attorney really dug, and he was very good. But being a ham radio operator, I'm sure that had a lot of influence on it. You know, it's not only just the money, which probably kills the majority of the people right there. Not only do you have to decide, am I going to write the check, but you got to convince your spouse. That's probably the toughest road ever. You know, hey, honey, we're not going to buy the new car this year, or we're not going to fix the siding on the house, or put the new floor in the kitchen you wanted, or something like that. We're going to forego that this year, and or we're not taking vacation this year. You know, those are pretty tough choices to make, and impossible ones in some scenarios. So that's the real difficulty of it all. It's the deep pockets of groups and associations, and unfortunately, we're a land of laws, and you know, we bought it. We have to play by the rules.
But it would be good. It would be good to get an effort going, I think, and we need to. I think that would be something that, if you're part of the league and you're in a position to make the suggestion, I know I'll shoot a couple of emails out and see what can be done. I think it would be good to start a fund. Where all amateurs can contribute to the fund, and find a good central type of an attorney that would represent and understand all the ins and outs, because you know, it would be very impressive if you have the neighborhood association come to you and say, you're going to have to take that antenna down, you know, and then you say, well, and rather than you be the bad guy, you know, first off, do all the stuff that you can do as far as PR is concerned. Give the materials from the ARRL, you know, paint the good, healthy, friendly picture of amateur radio and why it's important that their neighborhood have a ham, you know, nearby.
Invite your local newspaper and media.
That's another key factor. That's definitely what puts it over the edge. And then when it gets to the point where, you know, they don't want to talk to you and their mind's made up, then you say, well, let me refer you, or let me, you know, all of a sudden an attorney that really knows what he's doing, especially an out-of-state attorney, you know, that makes it more and more threatening, you know, when you get this this attorney in some other town that's not in your local area that writes a letter and says, cease and desist, or we're moving forward. I think that could really serve a purpose to stop a lot of this, because they'd have to reconsider. They'd have to think, are we going to fight this, and how far are we going to go? And we're talking about these neighborhood associations having deep pockets, and they have attorneys on retainer and all that kind of stuff. But that attorney on retainer is only on retainer for so many hours of work.
Then that's right. They're a businessman, too. They have to draw the line somewhere.
They've got it. If your guy that has been that's doing this by means of the league ties them up any further. And attorneys know how to do that, buddy. I'll tell you, they know how to drag something out. They can drag it out for an eternity, and
right, that's the first step.
You know, and when the local neighborhood association's attorney, he's got to go to level two now, and all of a sudden he says, well, in order to continue doing this, you know, I'm going to have a couple more $1,000. This could get nasty.
Yeah, and that's when they settle out of court.
You know, I was going to say that's going to provoke a little thought on their part. And then they've got to go back to the neighborhood association and tell all the members of the association why they're going down this road. They have to show some due diligence in this. And, of course, I think at that point is where maybe their case is going to fall apart.
Or they have to go back and say, we have to raise membership dues, and that opens up another can of worms.
Well, the other thing too, is, you know, I don't know, but I would only think that it would be fascinating for a neighborhood to be able to understand. My goodness, I mean, I go back to the time when I was a kid, you know, and of course, I guess it's different. You know, all of us have different paths we've come up in. But going back to, and I keep talking about Nelson Cosby in Dearborn, Michigan, who was a fellow that first demonstrated amateur radio to me. But he had a beam in the backyard. He had a 20-meter beam on a tower. I don't know how, the tower was maybe 50 foot. I don't think it was a very tall tower. Maybe been 40 foot. I don't know. It wasn't a real tall tower. And in the basement, you know, he had his Heathkit Marauder and Hallicrafters SX-101 and a Homebrew 813 amplifier. I mean, But it was just as neat as a pin. And when you walked in there, it was so impressive. And, you know, you can't help but think, what would the neighbors think if they were actually able to come in and visit your ham station?
And oh, yeah. When I moved here, I invite everybody to not only see it, but see me operate. My neighbors, when I first moved here, and they said, gee, you know, I put up a little vertical first thing. And they said, what's that? And I told them, I said, you are more than welcome to come in anytime. I would love to show you my station. Hey, we'd like to show it off.
Well, especially if you can get someone to come in, or maybe a group of them, you know, invite a group of neighbors over for coffee and say, well, I'd like for you to just, you know, come in and let me just share this with you. And you go in and you check into a phone net where people are checking in from all over the country. Now, I've done that here. I check in as often as I can to the Tennessee state net here, which is on 3980. And even though to us it's just so routine, you know, when these folks come in and sit down and all of a sudden you check in, or we go through all the counties, you know, and they hear all these different parts of the state checking in by radio.
That's a good thing, yeah. I do the same thing with East Cars on 7255 and South Cars on 7251, which are two great services. And there's one in the Midwest, I know, and people can hear mobile operators checking in from all over the place.
Right, and that's even more impressive. I mean, that is far more impressive. Here we have HDTV coming on the scene, and the Federal Communications Commission going to the ARRL saying, can you guys help out? I mean, these are commercial television broadcasters, you know, and they're asking the amateur community for help. I think it's fantastic. What a way to...
Yeah, we had an email come from a local TV station here, Channel 13 WVEC, that went out to all the ham radio operators in the Hampton Roads area asking to meet and assist them in some of the people with their conversion to DTV, just as a purely voluntary basis. They, you know, have a little program that they can acclimate you to some things and sort of train you at a very basic way. But, you know, the hams are perfectly knowledgeable and comfortable with this, and can help a lot of the people that are technically challenged.
Well, you know,
especially the elderly who need the most help in that area.
Yeah, and I think what was very interesting is that the onset of this, there was a lot of folks that felt like, well, I don't know that. Well, they kind of had a negative attitude toward it, you know, because they didn't quite understand exactly what could be done, you know. So, but when you saw the public relations part of this thing, well, then all of a sudden it began to, I think, hit home, and folks were willing to move on to that scene. Listen, I want to tell you, we're out of time, but I really have appreciated you joining up with us here, and let's give out your website information. The folks can come and check out your websites and see what all's going on here. So we have... the first one we have, well, you give the URLs because you know them better than I do.
Sure. Well, actually, there are three websites in total. The first one we mentioned was the weather site, and there are links to my other sites from there, too. But there's WilliamsburgWX.com, and, of course, my ham radio-only site is WC4R.com, and my personal family website is Rothnet. It's Rothnet.net. I'm sorry, Rothweb. I even messed that one up. Rothweb.net. I'll take advantage of on Rothweb.net, my resume is posted because I'll be unemployed by the end of this month.
But probably not for long. That's one thing about radio amateurs that's kind of cool, and that is, we've got so many skills and so diversified that... We don't usually stay unemployed, even in bad economic times. You know, our skills are needed in a lot of different areas. Well, I really appreciate your coming on here and talking with us. I'm sure folks have just enjoyed listening just as much as I've enjoyed participating. And
I hope they did. Hope we did some good and got the word out. I look forward to that and growing the radio art.
All righty, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ted. Have a great day.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to TedRandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. That's going to do it for this edition of QSO. Our guest has been Joe Roth, WC4R. Once again, we invite you to tune in next week, same time, same station for QSO.